Welcome to Radio Alchemy, where we fuse the fringe with conventional wisdom. Can you believe that this is the 21st century, that future we dreamed of some 50 years ago? Well, here we are, with war, hunger, poverty, environmental degradation, the eradication of animal and insect species, blatant oppression, and the continued concentration of wealth. And yet we sit in the midst of another changing of the guard of the presidential order, and they're saying the same thing, over and over again, the same interchangeable issues, hot buttons for the overtaxed, and I don't just mean monetarily. Are you finally ready to get outside the box, you incredibly resilient, massive, cosmic perfection? Yes, you. And take responsibility as the super people of this superpower? You have the reins in your hands, yet you let this beast cast rack and ruin to your benefit. Well, look around. What makes you think that you will forever be exempt? This is Radio Alchemy. Provocative information and interviews. Factual elements from commercial news to fringe research. We want you to join us as we construct this thing called life with all the pieces. Tonight, we are continuing our investigation into macroenvironments with Bob Dobbs. And you'll be hearing the third interview of four, which will be the introduction of the Android meme. Also tonight, a new summary on the World Economic Forum and amnesia. Thanks for being here. But first, I want to start off the evening with a little music interlude from another amazing spoken word artist. His name is Gil Scott Herring, and he's going to talk about something called the military-industrial complex. This is Radio Alchemy. I'm your host, Eben Ray. And we're going to get into this right now.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said because in general I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed. Because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex. But all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard the sumbitch. Now, all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitaries. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bitch an obituary. The military and the monetary from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries, tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary, from thousands of miles in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary, kept us all wondering if all of this was really truly necessary. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. If we only worked for peace, if everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. They've turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war, it is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war, it is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary.
People say, what you gonna do?
We hounded the Ayatollah religiously.
Looking stated,
bombed
say,
Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians, watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the armies, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. The military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery.
They got folks out there working for war.
Two, three, four.
Make a whole lot of money, start a little trouble, it's war. Turn this planet in the north and south, it's war. Start a few rumors over there, make money with a war.
Peace.
Say it to yourself.
I believe we got to work for peace.
Peace ain't gonna be free.
You gotta work for peace.
Do you believe in peace?
Gotta go to work.
They got folks out there working for war. Start a little trouble over here. Turn these folks in the north and south, it's war. Start a little trouble over here, what you got is war. Tell everybody you know, we gotta work for peace.
Gotta work, gotta work.
You believe in peace, time to go to work.
I don't want to sound like no late night commercial, but it's a matter of fact that there are thousands of children all over the world and Asia and Africa and South America who need our help. When they start talking about 55 cents a day and 70 cents a day, I know a lot of folks feel as though that's not really any kind of contribution to make, but we had to give up a dollar and a half just to get in the subway nowadays. So this is a song about tomorrow and about how tomorrow can be better if we all, each one reach one, each one try to teach one.
Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone got to go to work. Work for peace. Spirit say work.
There aren't many that can say it much better than Gil Scott-Heron. Maybe Bob Dobbs. But that's going to come up a little bit later. This is KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM, listener-sponsored, listener-supported public radio from Santa Barbara to San Diego and east to Big Bear. Millions of siblings we have in our KPFK family, and we want to thank you for your continued support. Up next, we are going into our new segment on global amnesia. Stay tuned.
Steroid-driven production base. Now, the whining that Stanley Fischer alluded to was not just from third world nations, but also, interesting enough, from Gerhard Schroeder, who last year warned of speculative capital being able to drive entire national economies to the brink of ruin. It was Britain's Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, who called for the surveillance, early warning, and crisis prevention mechanism. The Harvard Institute of International Development spoke of how the Asian financial meltdown is only a part of a wider crisis stemming from the rampant rise in global capitalism, as international markets have the tendency to overreact to both positive and negative news. And lastly, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak stated that there is something wrong with a system that wipes out years of hard-won development because of changes in market sentiment. but back to the present day and the Third Way. Outside the heavily guarded walls of this alpine resort, some 1,300 protesters, 500 reported in the New York Times, busted up McDonald's, set fire to cars, and busted whatever windows were attached to the facility. The police, who were in full riot gear and supported by water cannons and helicopters, showed the class our forces lacked in Seattle and did not provoke or engage the protesters, though two officers were hurt, but not seriously. Our benevolent protectors, meanwhile, were attending some of the following seminar topics. Here are just a few examples. The future of religion, beyond beliefs. Science, medicine, are we playing God? Greens, labor, and globalization, boost or barrier? Beyond the human genome. Bioterrorism, living with the threat of hyperviolence. The blurring of humanity, nature, and machine. Can anyone control risk? It's not the economy, it's the society. The future of biotechnology, mastering the G revolution. Healthcare, what is the value of life? These among many others. Now a summation of sorts. As you might have witnessed from Clinton's final State of the Union address, he is a master toastmaster, a master speaker. The controlling elite will find it hard-pressed to replace him. But before he goes, he is setting the dogma for the continuance of business as usual. Couldn't you just imagine him there, behind the scenes in Seattle, saying to his cohorts, hey, watch this. I implore you to make these proceedings transparent and inclusive. I feel the protesters' pain and their right to feel unheard, and it's time we listened. That, coming from the man responsible for bringing the WTO, IMF, NAFTA, and UN to its stature of uber alles. He pulls a complete 180, and our media talking heads do a double take, and then they start to believe him, while he knows implicitly that we have amnesia and that he can say anything, and we are so drugged, so distracted, and too overtaxed to recall the facts. This is the trappings of the information age. The facts are out there, and because of that, it becomes our right and responsibility to be informed, but instead, we're overwhelmed. That's why Governor George Bush, who smiled over getting an endorsement from a Canadian fast food item, whose name he recognized as the Prime Minister of Canada, won yesterday's primary along with Vice President Gore. It's called amnesia. For example, I read 8 different reports to get these various facts, and that's the key, finding the pieces to the puzzle, laying them out, and backing up to get a clear picture. And you heard it here on KPFK, where the next WTO meeting is going to be. It's going to be in Qatar. That's right. Yet again, right in front of your face, they flip with arrogance and condescension. So watch, as we'll start hearing this universal dogma, watch how it travels the globe. Tony Blair sums it up. That's our mantra. That's our pitch. That amnesia is dead and flinching, just enough here in the U.S., in California, to pass Prop 21 in the face of a 43% drop in juvenile crime. And we passed Prop 22 to solidify the sanctity of male-female marriage, just as it is sanctified, packaged, and sold on Do You Want to Marry a Millionaire? In the words of the incredible Dick Gregory, we've got a big job to do. So stay with us here on Radio Alchemy and here at KPFK as we help you formulate your escape from this madness. Up next, part 3 with Bob Dobbs. But first, for those of you who weren't with us last Wednesday, a little background info on Bob.
He was born in France in 1922 to a father who was a butler to an oligarchic family. The Dobbs name had already been immortalized by Charles Dickens, who back in 1893 wrote of the toadies of London, suck-ups, mesmerized by power. In this writing, Dickens was referring to Bob's great-grandfather, who, as a nondescript character, seemed to know what was going to happen in Parliament, England, and the world for that matter, 6 weeks before it hit the press, in a matter of speaking. A family doing the bidding of the ruling class at the highest levels of intelligence circles. This is what Bob was born into. And by age 14, his father started to introduce him into the world of intelligence. It is at this time, starting back in 1995 in the U.S. and before that in Canada, that Bob decided to start releasing notes from his diary, telling of the secret history of the 20th century. You can find these matters in Flipside. The newest issue is number 121, and it's on punk magazines and punk music newsstands around the Southland. He's the author of Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs, published by Perfect Pitch Editions, ISBN number 0-969-4528-1-0. So now we're going to come in and hear the number 3 of the 4 series interviews with Bob Dobbs. Thanks for listening to Radio Alchemy. I'm your host, Evan Ray, and enjoy. And we're continuing the series on, there is no classification for it. But to start off the show, I want to ask you, Mr. Dobbs, the culmination of what the subgenius church wanted in July 5th of 1998, you fulfilled that before their expectations. Will you tell us?
Yes.
Will you fill us in?
Yes. In February 1988, I was doing my show on CKLN in Toronto, and all of a sudden I announced that I need as many people as possible to phone a number. I think it was 65 Toronto code 416-657-8040, which was my home number. I said, call and say, vote for Bob. Indicate a vote for Bob. So I said, you wouldn't understand it, but it's all wired up inside the imploded electronic situation we're in. It can screw up the recording session of the votes of the Secret Council of 10 and give me the majority. And they don't even know this is going to happen. So I announced that around the end of February. The next week, I came on, and I announced that it worked. I thanked the people who called. They all called and said something on the tape. I might have even played it and then played some of their remarks. And then I said it worked. It whapped the scene psychotronically, so I was able to knock out Prince Charles, the Romanov faction, and the Turn and Taxes faction. So I won the Secret Council 10. So that was in March 88. A few months later, I started to play tapes of me talking to somebody, very profound conversations. I announced that this was the Exus, that the Exus had landed in February 88, and it helped me, as well as the callers through the phone-in show, to knock off Prince Charles and company.
And when you say knock off, you don't mean literally knock off.
No, just weaken their power base, and then I'm at the switchboard, and I have the final say. You know what I mean? Like in any committee, the chairman of the committee has the final say. So I want to get the chairman. I call the chairman of the Secret Council 10. I mean, we don't call ourselves the Secret Council 10, but it's just for public consumption that this was a secret government.
Yes.
And it's a secret solar government.
Yes.
So I said, when I started playing the tapes of my conversation with the Exus, I said, we know in the Church of the Subgenius mythology that the Exus don't come to July 5th, 1998, July 5th being 22 years after my father's death on July 5th, 1976. The problem is that the average member of the Church of Subgenius, Reverend Arvin Stang and Philo Drummond and the rest of them, just young guys and girls running around, they don't know that under electronic speed-up conditions, we live 200 years every 12 months. So July 5th, 1998 would happen, that old calendar system, would happen a lot earlier. And when it actually happened was February, late February, 1988. The Exus came. Now, Stang and him thought it would be July 5th, 1998, but they didn't know really, because they based that on my father's death date, 22 years after he died. But when they would come is immeasurable when they would come. So if we've lived 200 years every year, every 12 months since about 1950, so what's that? From 1950 to 1990, that's 40 years. 40 times 200 years, that's about, what, 8,000 years or something. So it was really like 8,000 AD in real terms, in what was really going on compared to previous human experience. So the X's came. I announced that the reason it didn't happen July 5th, 98, 10 years later, was that the humanoid calculations by staying in them were just based on obsolete measuring systems. But the important thing was that they were here, and I can present dialogues with them. So I began presenting dialogues, and they were explaining this and that and all kinds of things. So nobody believed, of course. What the hell is this? Bob's talking to some guy. Sounds like an English, a British, old British professor. And I said, well, of course. Why do they have this, the crop circles in England? There's an interesting thing about England. I'm not saying the British are special people, but there's something important that happened historically in Britain. And if the X's are going to present themselves, they're going to first speak English, the universal language at this point, and they're going to have a British accent to locate it to the crop circle zone, you see? So it was a total simulated voice. It's not what the X's sound like or talk like in real levels, but when you create it, you bring it down to the speech level, that's what they sound like. So the X day, the famous X day, happened in February 88 and had a very important point. Stang was right to say that in July 5th, 1998, that the X's would come and Bob Dobbs, our savior, would negotiate and barter with the X's and save the subgeniuses while the X's literally ate up two-thirds of the world of population and destroyed the planet. Bob would, if you hook in, send in your $30, you would have a membership card, and on July 5th, 1998, you race to Dallas, was the scenario, right, and you can get on Bob's flying saucers and bypass the destruction that the X's were bringing. So that was the scenario. Well, Stang did that under the influence of drugs and inspiration and imagination when he created this scenario in the late 70s. He said what he tuned into, that there was a factor of savior, of saving people from the X's. But technically, it was the android meme that Bob was going to save us from, and Bob and Connie were going to do it by being the first to retrieve the human scale or be a human being again. So the destruction was a more subtle disappearance level of the population from 1945 to 1990. Not a monster, but it's still like that guy we just heard today. It's a vampiric force that eats everything up. Well, that happened as the machine came alive and replaced the ESP of humans with cloned ESP. So all this happens in late 80, in 88, and then by 1990, I get a real level of victory with the discovery of new health modality and the cold fusion announcement. That, if you look at my chart, everything begins anew in 1990. So what you have in the 90s is the after image of the battle from 1977 to 1990, that battle, which was me working and hoping to knock off and take over the Secret Council 10, with the unforeseen help by Prince Charles and the others of the X's helping me, plus other sources I had. That victory is a hidden ground, is a fact, but nobody knows it in 1990. But then events of the 90s actually show you this, if you know how to read the signs. And the culmination of that was July 5th, 1998, up in Brushwood, I think it is, in western New York State, is where all the subgeniuses gathered for the weekend. And it's all on video. You can see all the weekend activities leading up to Sunday. I think it was a Sunday morning, 7 o'clock. And the night before, they opened the mic. They have their favored members of the church who are funny, comedic ranters. But then they had everybody ranting. So everybody was on there. Every Joe was in the last hours before the end of time. Right? And they were saying their last rants. And it's pretty funny if you get the video. These are the ridiculous stuff they were talking about. So at 7 o'clock in the morning, they're waiting. They do a countdown. 10, 9, 8. They get to right exactly 7 o'clock, July 5th, Sunday morning, 1998. They look out over the horizon in a beautiful camp resort. Nothing happens. So everybody says, Stang, what's going on? Stang's up at the podium at the mic. He's, let's do it again. They do it again. And and nothing happens. Stang looks around with his put on dumbfounded look, and then everybody's rioted, and they took Stang and they carted him out. They carted him over to the lake,
yes.
And they put all this syrup on him and put pink feathers. And pink is the enemy. You don't want to be a pink. So they put pink feathers on him and took all his clothes off and threw him into the lake.
Oh,
and everybody's taunting him, saying, "You ripped us off, that Bob. Where's Bob Dobbs?" And all this
Bob
shit.
Dobbs.
So then, since I within their world, I'm known as the Canadian Bob Dobbs.
Right.
That's how they because those albums came out of Canada. So Stang is sitting there, standing there in the, and this is all on video, and he's standing there nude with the pink feathers, and he sort of starts, "Bob, why you let me down, Bob?" And so a couple of people start saying, "I guess we got to go to Canada. I guess the Canadian Bob was the real Bob, because he said nothing would happen, and nothing did happen. He must be right." So it's right there on tape. They suddenly realize that I was more accurate. So Stang, he's all despondent, and he goes, go to Canada. I don't give a damn. Bob, where are you, Bob? Bob! What happened? And it's really funny. So that's how it ended.
Oh my God.
Then they all went home. But they're so addicted to it, they went back again this year and they call it X Day 2. They're still trying to do it. But I didn't see anything on their alts.slack, is their chat room.
Yeah.
And I didn't see much. There's a few people went up, but I think it's all diminished and there's no energy to keep it going.
Right.
But there was a lot of interest in the youth culture about it last year, and they were all emailing and saying, "I was there. It was the most incredible weekend because of this whole drama, and everybody was funny and ranting, and they had bands." And I remember one kid said, "It's incredible what Stang did. He set this up 17 years ago, so that would have been like 81. That was when I think they did their first public devival. They used to have, not revival.
Yeah.
I mean, it was first perceived as a satire on the fundamentalist culture that was surfacing in America in the early 80s. So from 81 to 98, 17 years. So this guy said it was incredible. Stang built up this performance work, this art piece for 17 years, and it was just a great culmination. And it was really good as an art form.
Right.
And it was, because it was connected to me, it would be good because I'm the hidden ground. I really do give slack.
Yeah.
And so they were inspired by what I did, and they created a nice secular version of what was of a very serious matter,
yes.
Which was me taking over the solar government.
Yes.
So that's what happened in July 15, 98. But what really happened was that the first flip side comes out. I'd been in it in a dialogue format like these kind of interviews since July 95. But in July 98, they made me no longer a feature. I became a columnist. So I started releasing my diary entries, The Secret Files of the 20th Century.
Yes.
And symbolically, it started in July 98 when in the popular culture level, the X's had arrived or hadn't arrived, that whole thing. So the real Bob knowledge starts coming out that month.
Yes.
So I would tell my associates would email to the alt.slack and say, "See, Bob, now we can find out what's really going on. We don't have this Reverend Ivan saying performance art distraction. That was fun and entertaining, a good John the Baptist preamble to Bob."
Right.
And now Bob's here. Now we can read it in Flipside. And so since July last year, I've been putting out the real history of the 20th century, which describes all the factors that led to me to take over in February, March, 88.
When you talk about the X's, who are the X's?
The real X's?
Yes, that you dealt with, the British.
Right, the British voice. They are the interdimensional reflection of the real physical aliens that are going to make contact with us, as I said here in Mesquite, the Boodians.
Yes.
So I wasn't talking to the Boodians.
Right.
I was talking to an interdimensional access to their thought forms, to their mind space.
Yes.
Like an ESP. So I am talking to an ESP simulation of Boodian consciousness,
yes,
but not the Boodians themselves. No humans have had any contact with the Boodians since 6000 BC. There's a little occasional interaction in around the time of Jesus, not in Latin America, nothing to do with Jesus, but and been sightings, but no, there's been no real civilizational contact since 6000 BC.
In crop circles.
What? And the crop circles are how they're communicating now.
Really?
So I used to be able to predict where the crop circles would happen.
Yes.
Outside of Britain. And I said one of the places will be Nova Scotia, where I spent a sort of sacred, because Bob spent many decades there in the 50s and 60s, meaning me, I spent.
Yes.
And so I said one will show up in Nova Scotia, and 6 months later there was one in Nova Scotia.
You know, we've had some on the continent of America, haven't we?
Oh, you had them all over the world.
Yes.
But the popular image is that most of them are in Britain.
Right.
But occasionally they show up across Canada. But I said there will be one in Nova Scotia in honor of me in the next few months, and one showed up. It showed up in the newspaper. Hey, we Nova Scotians, we got a crop circle, you know. what I mean?
So did you always know to save the Church of the Subgenius that you wouldn't have to manifest a ship and take everybody off, that it would just be a conversation? Did you always know that?
Well, for about 3 months before July 5th, 98 last year, they don't have access to me. I'm living in New York. These younger guys, they don't have access to me. But I occasionally show up in different media interviews, and they'll say, "Hey, show it up again." You know, this guy claims he's Bob and all this stuff. So, and Stang knows I am Bob. But they like to, as part of the joke, "This ain't Bob. That's a Canadian Bob, the phony Bob, the screwed up Bob." You know, and they make great rants on it.
Right.
When the albums that the Toronto people put out, they would, in their divisals, they would take the album and throw it in the audience, and they'd all tromp on the disc, you know, mass killing above. And then they would play on WFMU, one of the famous college stations of America,
right,
in East Orange, New Jersey. I Can Pick It Up.
Yes.
So they used to have the Subgenius show on.
Yes.
It got knocked off a few months after X Day last year, so
yeah,
the whole energy's dying, so it can't be run anymore, because what can they run? It's all over, right?
Yeah.
So they're trying to mutate something in Cleveland with this the Einstein Orchestra or something. I can't remember the name. It's a good band in Cleveland. They do broadcasts there, but it's sort of post-Subgenius ideology. They're trying to keep that going. I could hear in New York City, and any people who knew me, I could tell them, tune in the radio. It was Monday night at 1 at night, I think, 12 or 1. And they could every now and then hear these rants against me. You know, so I'm sitting in my apartment listening to this stuff, broadcasting out of WFMU. It was really an interesting experience to hear this abuse of me going on in the popular thing. And my friends would listen, and they go, "What is this, Bob? What? Why is that? Why are they talking about you?" People didn't really know who I was. And then I sort of slightly tell them a bit. And so they just crack up when trying to perceive this phenomenon of me listening to myself in New Jersey, and they'd be on there saying, "This is Bob's ecology, we must kill it, we must drop," and they'd be ranting against me. And this would happen periodically. I even used to call some of the talk shows on WFMU. This guy named Chris T had one Friday night, 6 to 7. So I'd call up and I'd harass them. You know, I'd talk about Bob's ecology and all this stuff, and they'd hang up and I'd call back. And so I'd keep calling. So eventually the station manager, who kind of liked me, told Chris, "You should have a talk. You should let him on and talk to him." So then I had a nice 20-minute talk, and I talked about my relationship with the Church of Subgenius, which is always in the public culture of the issue. What are you? Are you the real Bob Dawes, blah, blah, blah? So we go into that, and then I get some new knowledge out that they don't even expect, so they don't know how to respond to the new knowledge, whatever, I'm giving you that blows them away, or they try to respond. So about 4 months later, I'm listening to WFMU, and all of a sudden I'm hearing that phone conversation with Chris T on WFMU on the Subgenius show, because there's always Subgenius spying and taping me whenever I show up in the media. They send it to Stang in Dallas, and he puts it into his show.
Ah.
So I was getting a loop going, you know what I mean? So now, what am I saying? What's the point here? What was the question?
The question was, these guys, what was, did you always know that it was going to be just a conversation?
Okay, so that was my preamble of my interaction with media over the last 5 years in New York, making fun of them as they made abuse of me or made fun of me. So, but 3 months before July 5th, 1998, I started calling up the actual Subgeniuses, and there's about 10 to 20 of them around the United States who have shows.
Yes.
And they play Stang tapes and they do their own improvised thing. So I had their phone number, so I called them up, and several of them, I said, "I'm Bob, blah, blah, blah." They go, this would be off air. "Really? Oh, yeah, I heard about you. Yeah, okay, well, just a minute." They would plug it on, and then they'd start to talk to me.
Right.
And I'd explain to them how X Day was, nothing was going to happen. So I made a good effort to communicate to all of them that nothing's going to happen, reinforce what I've been saying for years.
Yes.
And, of course, we go into a long interview because they said, "Well, what did happen?" And I go back to February 88 and explain all that.
Right.
And they go, "Well, I don't know. What? They just wouldn't believe it, or they'd freak out over it." And so I laid out for the public record that nothing was going to happen.
Yes.
I reinforced it for several months, right up to the weekend before X Day.
But that train was on the tracks.
And they were going. Yeah, and so what happened is they would never send me tapes, but I had a friend, through his credit card, get the tapes, and by February 99, February 99, I had the 5 or 6 tapes of the whole weekend, so I sat back and watched it and saw the whole thing on tape, which I dropped up there and spied on a little bit, but I didn't get to see everything. But they had a lot on tape.
Yeah.
And I watched the whole thing, and it comes to the climax where Stang is being tarred
and feathered.
And what was great is that he didn't edit it out. He has the people yelling about the Canadian Bob Dobbs, and we have to go to Canada now. And so I called up his manager, Jesus, he's called Jesus, and then thanked him for having the guts to put the real truth in the end. So he said, yeah, well, I'm glad you appreciate it, and this is a business, so goodbye, and he hung up. So
they just never knew.
They never understood, but they created great
kitsch
simulation about it, you know. Yes. Which even once they realize, or everybody realizes who I am and what I'm doing, you know, in 50 years they'll go back and they'll see, they'll be able to live my state of mind listening to these guys make fun of me, and it's very entertaining, you know what I mean? But it was based on facts, so that that'll make it even more richer. I'm going to make them famous. They're going to be famous in the long run. They picked the right guy to make fun of, you know?
So was the power in your coup d'etat over the rest of the shadow government because you are in the heart of the Android meme?
Right. That's it. Because I had to deal with the Android meme from 77 to 90. We all did. But because of my secret sources and secret networks and working with Zappa and Marshall McLuhan and Mae Brussel in the 60s and 70s, I created a knowledge base that allowed me to do a jujitsu on the Android meme that Prince Charles, Gorbachev, and Romanov, and Prince Turnataxis, Gorbachev and Romanov being together, they didn't do. They couldn't do it. And with Connie's help, with her medical ability, that war between 77 and 90, which required me, this is a symbolic way to say I'm inside the Android meme, required me to get on the air in 87 and go public and be part of the electric vortex.
Yes.
Of electric, external, popular culture.
Yes.
I had to get on. Prince Charles wasn't going on a local college station being a radio show, you know.
Right.
Or that's what I knew, since the Android meme was an extension of electricity, and the Android meme was electrical, and then it was even more complex.
Yes.
You had to be inside it.
Had to be inside.
Yeah, and so I did it, and it was through that that I was able to use the phone messages to warp the Android meme central computer control, which we were inside, which was the election results.
Yes, yes.
So that's what I knew. What I figured out, because working for, before I was chairman, I was an employee, and eventually became a high-level employee, so I knew what was going on, was involved in a lot of nefarious activities, which was all part of media ecology, organizing the complexity of the environments, and people get out of hand, and because everybody needs jobs and all that slavery, you had to knock off the people who were becoming monkey wrenches in the gears.
Yes.
So. But I always wanted to get out of that situation and free us from that.
Yes.
So what I did secretly was connect with various people. For example, I was assigned to spy on Marshall McLuhan in early 54.
Yes.
As I got to do what I did with him, I began to realize that there were some other interesting aspects of his information that I personally could do as the agent in the field and not report back to headquarters.
Yes.
And that it went from McLuhan to Zappa to Dr. Beter to Mae Brussel, Sherman Skolnick, and Cosmic Awareness, which was a medium, a psychic medium, Dave David Worster. So I built up this private network that my father, once he found out about encouraging, he says, this is what I knew you had to go to North America for, because we're going to get out of this situation.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, right.
Our Butler family tradition.
Yes.
So all that information led to my ability to go on the air in 87 and do this thing for 8 months, June 87 till February 88. That was a key period.
Yes.
And that's right when Gorbachev is starting to talk to Reagan and the Berlin Wall is starting to imply.
Right.
And I predicted on October 16th, 1988, David Porter in Los Angeles came over to Jerry Fiocca's. I just met Jerry. I knew him by phone through the Zappa world.
Yes.
Jerry worked for Zappa. And he interviewed me, and I laid out the scenario.
Yes.
And it's on the record. So in November 89, when the wall went down, David Porter, I'm not on a show until 93, but he happened to hear the tape, and Chase says, my God, Bob Dobbs predicted this, and he played it on his show on November 25th, 89.
There we go.
So Robert Guffey discovered all this recently after seeing The Matrix, and he's documenting some of the Toronto shows, and he's found a segment I forgot. December 88, I do an expanded prediction of the Berlin Wall and what's going to happen to Russia and Germany in the 90s, and I lay out even a broader, accurate predictions.
Yes.
So now we come to the, what is this I'm inside of, the Android meme.
Right.
Right?
How did you discover, tell us,
yeah.
How did you discover this?
Well, the Secret Council 10 knew, understood that beginning with the telegraph, you had an extension of what McLuhan called the central nervous system. But that's a too concrete You might think, you know, your brain circuit, the central nervous system. But what you got to understand is that the electric environment with the telegraph and then telephone and radio, those are live interactive environments.
Yes.
That it was an extension of a collective knowing. In simple terms, the hundredth monkey effect. You know, one monkey invents something or makes a little leap, and then the other monkeys in the tribe across the island absorb it and becomes a meme.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Something they share in it, and we don't know how it became from one little monkey synapse to a collective synapse, so to speak.
Yes.
Now, taking the 100th monkey effect, you don't get that with books. It's slower with the printing press. But when you have the telegraph and then the electric technology, you have instant communication. You've actually materialized, technologized the 100th monkey effect.
Okay.
What we could call ESP, that becomes part of the culture characteristics of apes or of cultures. But you have to understand that when we do it electrically, you've externalized that ongoing collective sensitivity that human beings have.
Yes.
All right, so we call that ESP. Electricity is a manifestation of ESP, because humans before electricity have ESP. We always have ESP. That's just you being able to understand my words, take them in, convert it, and put it in your system, and then spit them back to me. And in the process, understand what I'm doing. There's ESP between two people,
right,
in language.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
We don't have to be so dramatic that ESP is me traveling over distance. Just think of this. All languages contain the wealth of that race's, grouping's experience. All words contain the experience. And philologists know this and they go into it. So the occult notion of Akashic records, all time and space and inventions are in the Tibetan mountain, that happens in every word in any culture's language.
Yes.
All right? So we look at it less romantically or gnostically. And then when you realize that technologies are extension of language, the printed book is a beginning of... What happens when you have the printed book? You have history simultaneously. You have people living their normal lives, and that creates a history.
Yes.
And then they're reading books about a history.
Yes.
So they're having two histories right there. But it's a split phenomenon. But when you get in the electric environment, you have... ESP, people understanding things and the technologies that built the electric environment, you have that as a collective effect. It's a living thing. It's an extension of the living 100th monkey effect that humans have previously through language.
Yes.
So electric environment is living language.
Yes.
It's electrified language.
Yes.
So when you then look at telephone, that extends the ear and voice. Radio extends the ear and voice.
Yes.
The telephone, though, is just one or two people, or originally a party line at a small level. The radio is over millions of people, all right?
Yes.
Now, you've got the acoustic side emphasized with radio.
Right.
When we come in with TV, you can see TV as well as hear it, and it's the instantaneous live transmission of reality, all right? It's content. Also, it has movement if you move the camera, so you got your kinetic senses, and you also have your proprioceptive senses. All these, it's extension of basically all our senses.
Yes.
You can think of it as a television as your head chopped off and rematerialized over there, and you're looking at what your head does. Your head perceives things live.
You know, that's...
The TV is over there. It's a live consciousness picking up things.
It's almost like the TV has replaced travel in a sense.
Exactly. Now, you think of... telekinesis, the old ESP idea, that I will meditate and lift an object from across the street and it'll come flying into my room, right?
Right.
That is puny compared to how you travel via telephone, but especially by TV, which has the full sensorium. You are there and they are here. That's an ESP phenomenon. That's an X-ray beyond going through the walls. When you turn on TV, you've traveled through the walls and the world has come to you and you've gone to it. Actually, you haven't gone anywhere. You're resonating inside the telephone dial, so to speak.
Right.
All the world's in your telephone. Okay, so you can travel via TV. Now, if you say, I want my body to be able to go over there and astral project. Yeah, that's an interesting ability. But in this world where language is our first extension, when you have TV and you can travel live, and it interacts with previous technological extensions of language and goes back to language, and all media, including language or storage, the living factor of television alters speech, alters writing, alters movies, all the previous storage mechanism. It alters the Akashic records on the natural level of our creation, language, and our technologies.
Yes.
That is a profound metaphysical effect. So when you get to television, you have stopped the cycle of technological linguistic invention. You've come to the end because you have created it. You have come to the impossible fact of instantaneous transmission. You've simulated consciousness. Now, it's not just you watching TV. It's millions of people watching TV. Right. So you've simulated ESP on a collective level to a refined point where you get all your senses involved. So that happens with TV in the 50s. Now, what happens next? You then have the satellite. Well, first you have the computer, and then the satellite. I won't go into the details of that, but the point is, then you get the microchip. And what does the microchip do? It's now evolving to create a virtual reality, which is still the TV screen, and that screen is now designed within the molding factor of the chip to do point-to-point communication with you. What we call virtual reality is when you will be able to interact through the electronic ESP and interact with another consciousness on a one-to-one level. So the chip brings in human-scale communication, whereas television was just massive ESP, confusing as it was for in relation to previous technologies. But the whole point of the new chip technology and the nanochip is they're going to be able to have you control your ESP in a one-to-one basis.
Great. That's a great point to end, and we will pick this up in the next program. We'll be right back. This is KPFK 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM, public radio for all of Greater Southern California. And you've just heard part three of a four-part interview with Bob Dobbs, chairman of the Secret Council of Ten, as he began the discussion of the Android meme. Now, he is releasing The Secret History of the 20th Century and Flipside, a punk zine on music stands around the Southland. Now, we're going to have part four next week, and then a roundtable discussion with Bob and other Bobites. And we're going to try and make this a live call-in show, so if you have any questions for Bob, anything whatsoever, as you can tell, he can answer it, we'll just have a whole bunch of fun on the air, or else you will hear a taped session of us picking his mind further. And further. End tonight's show, this is Radio Alchemy, and my name is Eben Ray. Thank you for being here this evening. I'm going to do an excerpt from a talk from 1981. My God, that's like, something like 200 years ago, right? In sped up time. A talk that Dick Gregory did at Compton College, and it is amazing how what this man, as another spoken word genius, how his words resonate today. And we're going to pick this up in the middle of his presentation, just another food for thought from various sources of people all saying the same thing and saying it so beautifully and poetically, just urging you and all of us to get it together because it's time. So, all right. So we're going to listen to Dick Gregory, and I'm going to come back and sign off. And thank you for being here this evening.
Think about that. And then Iran brought out what America is really all about. Now, if you can find someone that can justify what happened to those hostages under any circumstances, they're crazy and insane. But with all of the wrong that happened in Iran, one day when history records it honestly, our reaction to it made us more vicious than them. Oh, we walked out in the street and jumped on Iranian students in America that ain't had nothing to do with it, but couldn't pay one of you punks to jump on the mafia who got a total grip on this country, including this town. You ain't gonna jump on nobody that might jump on you back. Why? Because you ain't nothing but a bunch of punks. Somewhere. Oh, we sitting on, we said, oh, what's wrong with them folks over there? And they supposed to be a religious people. Why should that surprise you if you just check that bad history? You don't even have to get down with no heavy research. Most of the heavy violence and viciousness that ever happened on this planet had religious overtones. But for some reason, as long as it's white and Christian, y'all can understand that. Oh, Khomeini's an animal. Well, what's wrong with them religious folks? Are you serious? What about Belfast? Them Catholics and Protestant Christians been blowing each other up for 15 years, and I ain't never heard none of y'all refer to the Pope as an animal because he can't make them Catholics behave. Last year, Prince Charles didn't want to marry that old broad he hooked up with now. Prince Charles had another one he was going to marry, but she was Catholic, and they told him last year, you marry her, we'll blow your ass away, boy. And told the Pope when he comes there next year, we can't guarantee that you'll be safe in England. And the Pope ain't never been to England in the history of the Vatican. But he goes to all them African, all them nigger countries, but he ain't gonna go to a white country because they'll blow his ass away. And then y'all talk about, y'all don't understand Khomeini. Y'all crazy. Something wrong. Oh, how can those religious folks act like that? You serious? The Ku Klux Klan ain't a bunch of atheists and use your Christian cross as their symbol. You serious? We got churches all over America that got a Jew boy on the cross but wouldn't let a Jew in the church. And if Jesus Christ came alive next Sunday, they'd have to ask that live Jew to leave. We got a Christian society that cries over the crucifixion of Christ, but ain't against capital punishment and too dumb and ignorant to understand that what happened to Jesus Christ was capital punishment. Which means if Jesus Christ came back to America today and bugged the same super rich folks, they'd give him an electric chair. And all y'all be walking around with an electric chair around your neck. But y'all don't understand Khomeini. Y'all don't understand Iran. The biggest Christian festivities that's held in the Western world just finished 3 weeks ago today in New Orleans, called the Mardi Gras. That is the biggest Christian festivities in the Western world, and the only Christian festivities where whores come in from all over the world to help you celebrate it. And don't take my word. Go to New Orleans. They'll tell you, during Mardi Gras, that Christian festivity, they sell more pussy and more whiskey in New Orleans that time than any other time. And that's all New Orleans is a whiskey puss town. Y'all crazy. And then after you, them Christians get there and get through all they feel, then Ash Wednesday, they hit the head on the ash and fake a prayer for 40 days. Y'all out your mind. And how long do you sit by and take that manipulation? How long? Somewhere. And they just keep programming us. The mall majority. Are you serious? The mall? What? They ain't never talked about no mall issues. They ain't never talked about racism and sexism and the gap between the rich and the poor. You ain't never told them to come out against world hunger. The mall majority. You ever see them on them? You see them on TV? Take a look at them. The mall majority ain't but a bunch of old ugly white women that won't nobody date. And if you don't believe it, don't take my word. Turn on the 700 Club and see how many of them old ugly women you take to lunch. Y'all got a big job. And I just wonder how long are you black folks going to sit by and believe that all the white folks is after you, and how long you white folks in America going to sit by and be silly enough to believe that you safe?
Well, I'm out of time on this edition of Radio Alchemy, and I'm your host, Eben Ray. And if you have any questions, comments, would love to hear from you. You can give me an email at radioalchemy@yahoo.com. And alchemy is spelled A-L-C-H-Y-M-Y. Radio Alchemy is one word. And that's at yahoo.com. I want to thank you for joining me. Come back next week. we're going to hear part four with Bob Dobbs. And then after that, we're going to go into some live discussions, and I hope you can join us then. Thanks for tuning in. This is KPFK 90.7, 98.7 FM for all of Southern California. Thank you, Roy. Have a good night, and peace.